Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Frog Watch with your one and only host, who is the most, Frog Watch.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
and welcome back to Prague Watch, my faithful friends out there in Prague Land. This is one I'm really excited about, and I've been hyping for a couple of weeks. This week, we have the Dave Kirzner special, and I'm going to be chatting with Dave as he gets ready to embark on a bit of a spring tour here. He's also mixing a live album from some dates that he did previously, and we're going to play some Sound of Contact, some Dave Kirzner solo stuff, and some new Mantra Vega from the just-released project with Dave and Heather Finley of Mostly Autumn. The name of that song that kicked off the show was Premonition Suite. It's from Dave Kirzner's New World album, the deluxe edition, which was released in 2015. It's some of the extra bonus material that was included on the second disc in that expanded set. But I'm going to get things rolling with the interview right now. So here I am sitting with Dave Kirzner, and what a wonderful pleasure it is to have you on the show, Dave. Say hello. Thanks, Dave.
Great to be here.
All right. Deja vu. All right. And, you know, recently on the show, I was playing some of The New World, and I commented that it's really good to be Dave Kirzner right now. You know, I see pictures of you are, you know, here you are on Cruise to the Edge hanging out with Yes. Here you are filming a video for one of the songs from The New World album. Here you are hanging out at NAMM with Keith Emerson. You're really, you get around, you look like you're having a good time.
I am. And, you know, those are just pictures showing some peak moments. But of course, in between all those pictures, there's just a whole lot of hard work just to be doing all those things. But so it's not maybe as glamorous 24/7 as it may seem, but I really enjoy every aspect of making music and performing music. So even when I'm not hanging out with Yes or Keith Emerson, I'm still having a blast, and I'm happy to be me.
You've been in the business a long time, really, when you look at it. I was reading about you online a little bit, and you know, you founded Sonic Reality back in the 90s. You want to talk some about that? I think it's really interesting what your company does.
Yeah, sure. I moved to Los Angeles in 89 and went to a music school out there called Grove School of Music, and found that I could earn a living as a synth programmer and eventually sound designer with sampling. And so I started doing that for different artists for, you know, when the samplers were more capable of. Sampler is an instrument that keyboard players use that uses recorded sounds, and you play it back and play it from the keyboard. And so I started doing it for, in the early 90s, for artists like, Crowded House and Madonna and whoever I came across that was doing that from the technical side. And this was what I was doing. And then it just kind of blossomed into all these sounds that I'm doing for Tom Waits or whoever it was, Smashing Pumpkins. I could actually make into products that any musician could buy now that they could buy it on a CD or eventually online. So it just became apparent to me, and I love instruments, and I collect instruments as well. And actually, that's where it really started for me too. It just got ridiculous to keep every relic that I came across. So I'd sample it, I'd record the sounds of it. If it was like, you know, I had one time I had the Moody Blues Chamberlain, which is like this old orchestral keyboard. And, cool. You know, it was kind of falling apart even. And to some collector, it was probably worth more than it was to me. At the time, it was huge, and I had a million other things that were taking up space. So I started sampling it, and then I had these samples, and I would license some of these sounds to keyboard manufacturers. I worked with Roland. I worked with Alesis. You know, these are – in fact, there's so many sounds that I've done over the years that – you hear sounds that I've recorded or libraries I've produced almost every day through whether it's like unlikely, you know, like Eminem or Coldplay or all these different artists use my sounds, and I may not even know it. And sometimes I do hear about it because it'll be through a company I work with called IK Multimedia, who makes music software. And so they'll do a piece on the artist, and I'll see that they used my sounds in, you know, the 8 Mile soundtrack or some whatever. And, you know, so this is stuff that's just what I did for a living while I pursued my artist desires of either working with – I worked with Kevin Gilbert in the 90s, mm-hmm. and I worked with El Shankar, I played with Peter Gabriel, and I had my own projects that I was trying to get off the ground and always writing, even if I didn't release it, the songs, but just, you know, having ambition to be an artist. And yeah, those are my roots, and that's where Sonic Reality fits in. It's kind of my day job.
Yeah. So is any of that stuff like ended up in, like, you know, I mess around with this stuff a little bit too. So I picked up like the complete 10 at Christmas. That was my Christmas present to myself. And it's just got all this cool stuff in there, vintage keys and, you know, just great strings. And, you know, I was really excited about the horns. Have you done that? Has any of your sampling ended up in those kind of software packages for musicians like me?
Yeah, I mean, in specifically Complete, I think we had some sounds in there at one point because I did some sound. Yeah, actually, I think some of my sounds for Contact are still in there. But we do our own third-party libraries, and they're interesting libraries. One of the angles in terms of, let's say, for progressive rock lovers, is our angles is we have exclusive libraries, sample collections, sound collections with Neil Peart from Rush, where we recreate his drum kit and there's his grooves with him playing and Nick Raskulinics, who's Rush's producer, engineering, and me producing. So it sounds like a Rush album, but you can use it in your own music. So it sounds like a virtual session with Neil Peart.
Yeah, that's
we
cool.
We did the same with Nick Mason and Alan Parsons, with Terry Bozzio, with Billy Cobham. I mean, all these great, iconic drummers would each have their own sound and style. Bob Siebenberg, the drummer from Supertramp, mm-hmm. and it goes on. So, and those are just drummers. And then I actually have a collection of sounds with Keith Emerson, where we sampled his very rare, expensive Moog modular, which most of us can't afford, but it sounds amazing. And even just as samples, you know, for it's just a really cool thing to have. So a lot of these things I do because I love it and I would want it myself. It's not necessarily the most popular thing you could do. Probably a hip hop library would be a lot more popular, yeah, and more useful, but somebody has to do it. It's almost like an audio archivist role. Like, and that's why these artists and producers have been willing to do it with me, is because it's like, there's a certain sound that they got in the studio. Let's say Alan Parsons and Nick Mason recording Dark Side of the Moon. That was done through particular equipment from the 70s in Abbey Road. And we went to a studio that had similar equipment still today as Abbey Road. I mean, the same equipment pretty much. And the two people, you know, the engineer and the drummer, and tuning it the right way and getting the right sound to capture that particular sound, which to me is timeless. And yeah, if you wanted to get a sound that was sort of Floyd-y, from what better way than to go to the original people to do it with the original equipment? So, and it's been very educational for me as a producer to act. It's like a master class. I'm sitting there recreating Dark Side of the Moon with Alan
Parsons. Yeah, that's awesome.
What mic did you use on this? Oh, okay. Oh, you didn't even. Oh, I see. And it's very interesting. And of course, we try to capture that in interviews and things like that, so we can share that information with anyone who's, you know, audio enthusiasts. But even just not knowing the techie side and literally just buying the sample library and being able to use Nick Mason's grooves or any of these other guys in your songs, it's just I think it's really fun. I used it on my album. I used Nick Mason drums on Solitude, and it's virtually Nick Mason playing drums on my album, but I'm just using Sonic Reality's product that anybody else could use. So kind of my contribution to musicians, songwriters, producers, engineers, keyboardists, is just this palette of sounds, from the basics of piano, bass, drums, strings, and all that stuff, to very specific, iconic, character sounds like the ones with these artists.
Yeah, I was blown away. I picked up like the Artorio, and it had like the ARP 2600 in it, and it had the Moog modular. And you know, not only are there all these presets, but you can actually move the patch cords around. I never even got into that because I can't even begin to understand it. But it blows my mind. Like, what kind of modeling must be there that you can actually pull the cords and move them around, like on that giant like telephone switchboard looking thing? It's mind boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had the real thing, and I still do have some like that. I don't have a Moog anymore, but I do have a 2600. Yeah, I mean, that's how the early days of synthesis was. It's great that you can do it in virtual software. I don't actually do that part, Arturia, you're talking about. Yeah. But I've done some work with Arturia. My thing is more recording sounds than the model. And I record the real thing, whether I've owned it and you know or still own it. But capturing the authentic sound and you know, with the particular character. Like I sampled Tony Banks' keyboards and Mike Rutherford's rare Rickenbacker double necks and things like that when I was working at Genesis Studio. Just because – and even we did drums in the Stone Room there with Hugh Padgham, who was a producer for
Genesis,
Genesis, and also Nick Davis, who's a good friend of mine that I've worked with Sound of Contact, and he – both of them recorded drums, you know, with this Phil Collins sound. It was incredible. And that has a very specific sound to that room. It's like a reflective room. You know what? If I didn't do that or somebody didn't do that, it just would never have been done. I just talked to my friend Jeff Collingham, who's worked at the studio for years, worked with Genesis, and he told me that my sessions that I did there were the last sessions outside of the band to ever be done there. And I thought how lucky I was that I got in there and was able to not just do it for myself, but to take some of its essence in a cool way with the engineers, producers that had worked there and offer some education or just some look, a glimpse, you know, inside this private studio. I don't know. I'm a nut for sounds and how records were made and finding ways to just capture it is, you know, you could tell I get excited about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, so do I to a degree, you know, that's really interesting stuff. And like you said, you're kind of acting as an archivist, you know, that's, you know,
yeah,
discovering how this was done and appreciating it and being able to allow other people to continue to use at least the sounds that were produced in these unique environments.
Just to kind of tie it back into music for people that aren't musicians that don't know the technical side of what we're talking about. You know, what happens in the studio is you're working on a song and the producer or somebody says, you know, this song would really benefit from like a real kind of Bonham drum sound, that type of sound, or a Ringo sound, or a Phil Collins drum sound, or whatever it is. And you want to get close, and you know I like to actually do that in the studio and mic things up, and I've learned how to mic it up certain ways and certain techniques to get those kind of sounds. But at the same time, sometimes you're either on a budget or you just want to go straight to the sound and just have it in your library. And so that's what I've done and that's why I do those things. It's like, well, I know that if I need a big beefy kick and snare, that it almost doesn't get any better, or toms, you know, big barking toms. It doesn't get any better than us recreating the In the Air Tonight drum sound. You know, I've seen people try to sample it right off the record, but technically that's illegal. And it's also not very, you don't have any nuances. You just have whatever you got off the record, and you can't do it anyway legally. So this is legal. This is us recreating it in the studio. Anyway, that's why I do it. And I actually use it myself, and the people that get it, you know, just love it because it's just so cool to be able to have the sound at the ready, you know, that you this the character sound you're looking for.
Cool. Very okay. Cool. Yeah.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you
Voyage 35 Radio.
So you want to talk some about Sound of Contact, and maybe we'll get into playing a track here?
Sound of Contact started because actually I was working with Genesis on just they use my software with IK Multimedia. Sample Tank, Sonic Synth, Miroslav Philharmonic, some of the other sounds that we did. And they invited me to their rehearsals to talk about sounds and software and whatnot. And that's where I met Phil's son, Simon Collins. And we immediately hit it off and decided to work on something together. We did a cover of Genesis, Keep It Dark.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that. Yeah, I like it. It's cool.
Thanks. Yeah, Simon said that he had never done a cover of his dad's stuff before, and he always wanted to, and he felt that after doing, you know, a couple solo albums already, that he was ready to do it, and he thought I was the right person to do it with. So we went into my studio, Sonic Reality, and we did it together. And from there, he did his next solo record, which was You Catastrophe, and I played a little bit of keys on that and co-wrote a song that Phil played on called The Big Bang. And after that, he, you know, we had sort of talked about, wouldn't it be cool to do a band? And so he came to me with Kelly and Matt, who had joined him for his live solo band, and said, do you want to make a band, like a real band where we all write together and everything? And I said, sure. And so we called it Sound of Contact. We recorded the album Dimension Op, mostly up in Vancouver, where he lived at the time. And we recorded a lot of it in 2010. But it eventually got released in 2013 on Inside Out Records. And I don't know if you know the whole story. I mean, we temporarily split, and I did my solo record, and now we're back together.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I'm looking forward to that. I was just listening to Dimension Odd again over the weekend, and it's really great. I mean, it's prog, but there's a lot of catchy stuff on there. Even my wife was liking it, and she, you know, she's not so into the prog. She's a little more into some of the pop stuff, but there was stuff in there that even she could appreciate.
Well, I'm proud of that. I think that's a really good thing, because that means you can go to a concert and you can bring your wife, or the wives can bring their husbands. I mean, it depends, you know. It's not always the case that both significant others are into the same style of prog, but it is always nice when there's something for everybody.
Right. So what's your favorite song on the Sound of Contact album?
I love them all. One that's very meaningful for me, because I started writing it years ago, initially about my former bandmate Kevin Gilbert, is Not Coming Down. And I play it in my set as well, on my solo stuff. It's one of my favorite songs. Probably the first song I ever worked on and wrote most of that I was proud of. That I could say I really feel that this song is genuine and is strong. I've written many, many, many songs over the years that will never be heard. And that's how it is as a songwriter. You have to write 100 lemons until you get to a peach.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat. I've written a lot of songs over the years. Now with the technology I have, though, I'm going back and cherry picking some of the ones that, hey, you know what? That demo, even though it's like 30 years old, it sounds pretty good. I'm going to redo that, you know? And some of them are turning out pretty nice. And the other nice thing is my son has a much better voice than I do. So I'm actually like throwing him one every once in a while, let him sing on it. But anyway, so Not Coming Down, I think we'll go ahead and we'll play that song right now.
Escape in a world of a different different shade. It's all the same, it's all the same, but you go back from where you came. In a cloud, take a look around. You're so high, you're not coming down. Broke the reins, fading away. You're so high, you're not coming down. You're so high and I'm coming down. So clever, you don't have a clue what is real and what is half of the field. You just can't feel. You're all messed up.
Once again, that was Not Coming Down from Sound of Contact, the Dimensionaut album released in 2013. So after that, you said you kind of broke up from Sound of Contact for a while and went off and did your own album, New World, huh?
Yeah, I think we had some difficulties you know, too many cooks in the kitchen kind of a thing. And we went our separate ways. You know, I had written a significant amount of the material on Dimension Ant, and it clearly was liked by people. I co-produced the record, and I got my, you know, jollies doing all these things that I dreamt of doing, thanks to Simon and everybody. So what next? I thought, well, you know, I should just do my own follow-up, because I was ready to just do the next, you know, whatever, Sound of Contact record. But unfortunately, you can't control what happens in a band. But I thought, you know, you can control what happens in your solo career if you just make that move. And I had never been the frontman before, ever. Mm-hmm. I'd always been doing backing vocals, always doing keyboards, you know, production, that type of stuff. So I thought, you know what? I think it's time. And I just did it. I pushed myself harder than I ever have in my life to do New World. And then ironically, it exploded into like, over the deluxe edition is like over two albums worth of material. So I had obviously, you know, this had been building up for a while, and I just didn't even realize that this was going to be, you know, my destiny. It's beyond my dreams. I would have been happy to just probably just be like a Tony Banks keyboard player in a band. And ironically, I'm in a band with Phil Collins' son. It doesn't get any more poetically, you know, satisfying. But yeah, when I was out of the band, it was like, oh, I'm out. Now what do I do? And I'm like, well, let me create a new level of ambition to reach, you know, a new standard to do. Well, what if I was just be self-reliant? And I always admired artists like Kevin Gilbert, more recently Randy McStein from his project Lo-Fi Resistance, and E, who I worked with on the Eels, or I almost was in the Eels. That's a fun little extra story. But you know, these and John Bryan, these guys that I've known throughout the years, always impressed me. Jason Faulkner, you know, they're just self-reliant. They could do every instrument, they could sing, they can write. I still love to collaborate, but it is nice to be able to do anything yourself, let alone everything in some cases. So I'm happy that I finally pushed myself to do it, because now I know that this is something that I can do. Like I won't break up with myself. I can make records and, you know, feel like I can make the decisions and be okay with that and still collaborate with other people. But the music will still go on now that I'm, able to sing my own lyrics, and it feels great. I love it. You know, it's. I should have done it a long time ago. I don't know why I didn't, but you can't go back in time. We're not really Dimensionauts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe we are, but as far as I know, I can't go back in time now. yeah. So I'm enjoying the solo career that I've started here with this.
It blew me away when I heard it in 2014. I'm like, wow. I remember clearly the first time I was listening to it with my iPod on a Saturday night, having a few beers, and I put that on. I'm like, holy smoke, this is kicking my butt sideways, you know? It was a really, really nice piece of work.
Thank you.
Yeah. You made a big fan right then and there. I've played a lot from it, but I'll play whatever you would want me to play at this point from it, because I love it. And so what do you think best sums up or represents New World? What's your favorite track?
Well,
I know this is hard. I know.
I don't really have a favorite track per se. I am proud of all of it. I suppose it's up to you. I mean, if you want me to pick one, I guess I can pick one. I don't know if one. I mean, okay. If one kind of sums it up in a sense, it probably would be Stranded, because that's the kind of jumping off point, and it's a whole rock opera that starts off the album, but that's the one that was played first. It's probably heard the most. So you may want to play something that's heard less, like maybe Under Control or My Old Friend or Ocean of Stars, if you want to do something kind of mellow. Or
okay.
Or you want to do the long one, do Redemption, which is Stranded Part 6 through 10, if you dare. It'll take up most of your show, though. It's 20 minutes. Well, yeah. 17 minutes on.
I've played longer stuff, but you know, we are talking a while here, so I don't know that I would be have room for that. But yeah, I'll pick something. I probably won't do Stranded because I've done that before, and I probably won't do nothing. But some of the other ones, you know, I'll pick one. I'll fix
how about them. Into the Sun? Into the Sun's actually, I'd say that's probably my favorite track off the album.
All right, then we'll play it. Into the Sun from Dave Kirshner off New World.
Thank you.
Okay, once again, that was Into the Sun from Dave Kirzner from his New World album, which was released in 2014, and we had the deluxe edition come out in 2015.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The whole other CD of added stuff. So after that, so you still got an iron in the fire with Sound of Contact, but in the meantime, you got Mantra Vega.
Yes. Mantra Vega actually happened before I started my, well, I'd started my solo stuff, but I had no idea, you know, I hadn't done it before. So there was a window where I was bandless and I was going to potentially produce Heather Finlay's next solo record. So we just started working without, you know, knowing what was going to happen, sending tracks back and forth and co-writing. And we found that the styles, the blend of styles seemed to be a little different than what her solo record would be. It was kind of a mix of, you know, almost like some, a little bit of Sound of Contact style, a little bit of Mostly Autumn style, a little bit of this and that, new sort of territories that we both liked. You know, classic rock, a la Fleetwood Mac. And
I could hear that. You know, it's got a laid back, it sounds totally different, I think, from anything that you've done. And different from what she's done. I'm familiar with her work, too. So, I rather enjoyed it. You know, that Fleetwood Mac thing you mentioned, you know, there is almost kind of a laid-back. I always loved that rhythm section. You got to say, that was one of the baddest rhythm sections ever. Just could get in that pocket. And like, well, Island has that kind of vibe now that you mention it. You know, that was a standout that I liked. I just played it on a show that I just uploaded to the network today. Because I've listened to it a couple of times and I like it. So yeah, go on. I don't want to interrupt you.
I was just going to say, as far as the rhythm section, that's the feeling I got from Alex Cromartie and Stuart Fletcher. You know, that Heather's played with in her band for years. They're just great guys, and they grooved well together. And so they flew out here to my studio in Miami, and we cut the tracks, the rhythm tracks together, and we got, you know, these vintage drum sounds in the studio, and it was just so much fun. And I love the sound of those old 70s records, Zeppelin and Fleetwood Mac in particular, those drum sounds and bass, they're just so warm.
Warm, yeah.
And so, you know, and so I just thought, why does that have to just be done then? Like, you can do it now. You just have to use analog equipment and this and that and mute the drums and do things, tune it right, and have players that have groove. So we had it. So we used it. And that was, you know, just something that we shared in common, all of us actually, just loving exploring these styles. But I do think that there is a nice balance between this new direction or new outlet, I guess, because you could call it like a big side project for us, if you will, a chance for us to explore a bit of these things we like about 70s records and modern alt rock and folk and all these things and prog. But at the same time, you do hear Heather's style from Mostly Autumn in there, and you do hear moments where it sounds, I mean, even some stuff, actually, one song has Matt Dorsey from Sound of Contact on it, a song that I started writing with him, called In a Dream, and he actually plays on it. And then there's, you know, like some keyboard solos that I do that I would do with Sound of Contact that maybe you wouldn't normally hear in her stuff. And there's recorders from Angela Gordon, the things that she would do with Mostly Autumn, sort of folksy stuff.
Yeah.
All blended together. I think for anybody who's a fan of hers or a fan of my stuff, there's a nice new mix to go to in this album, in The Illusion's Reckoning.
Voyage 35 Prog Radio.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. It was a challenge to do, but because we, you know, I live here and the rest of the band lives in England. But I love England. I love going to England. So it was, it was great.
That's on my bucket list. I'm sorry.
The only thing that was a bit of a learning experience was the timing of everything was a bit tricky. You know, I had no idea how deep I was going to go with my solo record. I did a Kickstarter campaign, and then I said I'd do a deluxe edition so that there was something extra that you could get. But I really took it seriously, and it isn't just an extra disc with some songs that weren't as good. I'm as proud of the songs, the new songs on that, as I am on any of the songs on the main disc. And actually, it's two different discs with the songs in the concept album's order. And this is how I am. You know, I just felt that it warranted it in terms of I had the material, and it just kind of fleshed out the story in a more cinematic way. Doing all of that and everything else, like touring and playing on Cruciers, like you mentioned, and doing a live DVD and being in another band across the pond was a bit much. So we decided Heather's going to tour the music from the album with her band, which makes more sense. And I'm going to carry on doing what I do, promoting my music. I'm going to do Sound of Contact, but, you know, the same things. Simon's working on his solo record. So it's kind of, you know, there's only so much you can do. but I like doing studio projects, especially. And then live is going to be rare. But when there's an opportunity, I actually love it. But it's just a little more challenging to do when you've got musicians who live in different places. And whereas recording a studio album with people that live in different places with the internet is, you know, a lot more feasible.
Yeah, I actually did that on my last little album project. The guitar player was at my house once, and, you know, he did most of his tracks. He could have been sitting at home at 2 a.m. in his underwear or whatever. He mic'd up his guitar amp and just, you know, went at it. So he was comfortable. He was at ease. He was at home, you know, and he came up with some good stuff, and he would just email me the tracks when they were done. You know, I popped them into the project. You know, it's amazing what can be done today.
Yeah. That's how we did it with Steve Hackett, with Francis Dunnery, Simon Phillips, and even Nick DiVirgilio, who drummed on my album. Most of the album, actually, he did it in a studio. He was touring with Cirque du Soleil, and on his days off, he would go into the studio to record for me and also for Big Big Train. And, you know, so he's able to work remotely with different artists. And it's not necessarily my ideal. Sound of Contact, one of the beautiful things was we did everything in the same room.
Yeah.
So we actually wrote some songs literally on the spot, like Omega Point. The music for that literally just popped out in one take, and then we came back and worked on the lyrics. But on my next album, actually, I'm doing a bit more of that because it's actually my preference. Because it's just so exciting to see what happens magically when you're collaborating in the same room and playing off each other, but I like to think that, and I guess it's proof if people enjoy New World, because it was done that way, the other way, which is me writing all the music and composing and arranging and then sending tracks around. And there probably wasn't more than two people in the same room at the same time, maybe me and Fernando or me and Durga myself, Robert English. But, you know, either way, you have to make it sound like it's a band playing and it's, you know, comes across as a cohesive piece. But I like both. I don't know how I got into the subject, but
I actually steered us that way. It's just amazing what you can do with the internet these days. And I know a lot of records, you know, do have at least some of it is done this way. But yeah, like you said, there's definite benefits to having everybody together, and you can feed off of each other, and sometimes you can get just a better sound that hangs together and just sounds, you know, more in a groove or whatever than if you, you know, just build it up with each person doing a track from some remote location. But anyway.
I know why we were talking about it, because we were talking about Montrevega, and as a project. And I think that basically I look at myself primarily as a songwriter and producer and keyboard player as well, but mainly like songwriter producer, because that's just, I'm a studio guy and I you know, that's where I thrive. And I like to create and I like to explore different styles and work with different people. And I really do enjoy playing live, but it's just more of a special event. So like, for instance, we're doing this very short European tour at the end of March. March 26th, we play in London, and then we play some other shows in the UK, play a show in Germany, and then we end it at the Prague Dreams Festival in Holland on the 2nd of April. And then that's it. And I come back and I do Rozfest here, and I have no other touring plans. We might do a few other festivals, but unless it was sponsored or something, or that was just a guaranteed, you know, you're going to get paid, you know, not lose a ton of money because it would be very expensive tour. I'd rather spend my time making more albums. So it's, you know, and capture a live show on DVD just so we have it, you know, for anyone who couldn't go see the few shows we do.
Yeah. So from Mantra Vega, what would you like me to play from that at this point? I played Island recently, so what else? What do you think sums it up there? If you could only play one for somebody.
Well, I guess you could play the title track, The Illusion's Reckoning.
All right, we'll do it then. The Illusion's Reckoning from Mantra Vega, just released this year.
Human beings.
And once again, that was the title track from the Mantra Vega album, The Illusion's Reckoning. So, in our email conversations, you kind of mentioned that you are also working on a solo album of live, I mean, a live solo album of the Dave Kirzner Band. And you said something about maybe having a track for me at some point. So you want to talk a little bit about that project? What shows were recorded, and you know, when's the album expected to be out?
The shows were recorded. Actually, it was meant to be two shows recorded, but one got rained out. It was a large event that we were headlining a local festival. But we also recorded a private event for my Kickstarter backers. It was indoors because the other one was outdoors. And, you know, with Florida, the weather, you never know. So we booked this other place and we did all the lights and the visuals and the sound, everything. And that's what the concert video and the live album is based on, this performance that we did, which was just a few days before we shipped off with Yes and all these great bands on Cruise to the Edge. And this is something we did in December. Actually, was it November? Well, anyway, it was at the end of last year. And now we've got this upcoming tour starting at the end of March. So my goal is to have the live album and DVD, ideally, Blu-ray, everything, ready so that we could actually have it at the merch table on the tour. But working really hard on it. I, you know, sometimes you don't know if you can get it done, and I don't like to sacrifice on quality. So I'm just going to, you know, I've got some people helping me who are fantastic. And yeah, either way, it will be available in spring. It's just a question of when. My goal is sometime, like, you know, before the end of March. So
very cool.
Could have just said that.
So is there anything else you wanted to cover?
One fun thing just to mention, I suppose,
okay,
is I'm a nut for, like, deluxe editions, special editions, extended versions, things like that. And so one of the things that I did for the new Kickstarter campaign that I did for the live, well, I just made an extended version. So in terms of, if you were to ask me, Dave, what are you doing now? So go ahead, ask me.
Dave,
what are you doing now?
Dave, what are you doing now?
Well, Tony, since you ask, I'm besides mixing the live album, I'm working on some new studio tracks that are bonus songs on the extended version of the live album. And I'm working with Fernando, who's just texting me now, asking me the BPM for one of the new songs that we're really excited about. There's going to be three new songs on the extended version of the live album.
Excellent.
Plus two Sound of Contact songs that we perform, slightly different versions. And then Great Gig in the Sky, performed by Durga and Lorelei McBroom, who used to sing with Pink Floyd, and they sing with my band. That's on the extended version of the live album.
Awesome.
But, yeah, it's a lot of fun what we're doing right now, working on some new studio tracks, too. I'm excited.
I'll look forward to hearing all of that stuff. All right, well, yeah, it's been great, man. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a blast, so... I guess we'll sign off.
So I hope you guys all enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed doing it. It was fantastic to catch up with Dave. He's a busy guy, got many irons in the fire, as you learned from all the interview material there. And I do want to mention, he is going to be on tour some this spring. March 26th, he's going to be at the Borderline in London. March 27th, the Musicians Pub, Leicester, UK. March 28th, the Robin 2 in Bilston, UK. March 29th, Sound Control, Manchester, UK. March 31st, Das Rhein, Rüsselsheim, Germany. April 2nd, I have a hard time with these Dutch ones. Boderij Zoetermeer, Zoetermeer is the city in Holland. And finally, he's going to be at Rozfest on May 7th at the Majestic Theater in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. So if you're going to be in the neighborhood for any of those dates, go on down and check out Dave Kirshner. And Dave was hoping to have a live track from his upcoming CD and DVD live project mixed and ready for me, but that didn't quite happen. So I'm going to leave you all with one more Mantra Vega song. The name of this one is Learning to Be Light, and once again it comes from The Illusion's Reckoning, the debut album of Mantra Vega.
Yeah. I will breathe the